Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 25, recorded February 16th, 2010.
Buonasera tutti!
And good evening, everyone, for those of you who don't speak Italian, which we won't hold against you.
Right. So, we do have some news this week.
Yes, we do.
First item of news, there's going to be another episode of Pet Life Radio, in which I am a guest.
Woohoo!
So, keep your ears peeled, petliferadio.com. You can check that out if you would like to.
And we will let you know more specifically when the episode comes out.
Yes, it'll be soon. And in our next item of business, yesterday, or maybe the day before, anyway, quite recently, I was seen leaping about the family room in joy and rapture because
he finally found a baby assassin snail in our tank.
Yes, I had seen many, many, many eggs. And the adults seemed to be quite happy. I saw the adults mating on several occasions, and they seemed to be healthy. They were eating other species of snails. But it had been since September, and I had not yet seen a young snail. I was beginning to wonder if something strange was happening. Perhaps I had all females and they were laying infertile eggs? I didn't know. Okay? But I saw that young snail and it solved all the problems. Apparently, they were just hiding in the substrate as they have been known to do. The young snail was about a quarter of an inch long, so it had been hiding for some time before I saw it because they hatch out at a much, much, much smaller size. In keeping with those snails that we often think of, like a ram's-horned snail or a pond snail, hatch out very small. But this one was obviously put on some growth. One issue that contributes to the cryptic nature of these snails in this aquarium may be the fact that the bottom of the aquarium is carpeted with Sagittaria subulata, or dwarf sag as it is often called in the hobby, a grass-like plant. So there's a carpet of it all over the bottom of this tank. About, what, 2.5 inches tall?
Yeah, about that.
And so that's, you know, maybe part of the reason why I couldn't see anything.
I think the other reason is that they're trying to preserve their image. You know, if you're an assassin, you can't just go crawling around in broad daylight and let everybody see you. They had to, you know, kind of be sneaky.
That's true. Maybe they changed their names to Ninja Snails.
Ninja Snails. I like it.
They're invisible.
They have a cartoon character show off of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, that'd be kind of gross. But you could. Okay, well, I think that's it for the news that's not related to the podcast for the day. So let us move on to the mosses.
Mosses!
That's our subject for today.
Now, not Kate Moss.
No.
Aquarium moss.
Yeah.
Just exactly. In case you're in the wrong podcast.
Aquatic and semi-aquatic mosses that can be kept aquatically is what we're talking about.
And in the water.
Oh, let us not get redundant.
Sorry.
It's okay. I wonder what was in your dinner tonight. Anyway, we are going to speak of mosses kept
Same
in aquariums.
Same thing that was in your dinner.
Okay. We're going to try, perhaps vainly, to proceed to the actual podcast about mosses.
I'll behave.
Okay. What are we going to talk about first? Well, let me tell you a little story. Okay. It's about mosses, though. Many, many, many years ago, when I was but a lad, I had a 1.25-gallon aqua tank with a pitiful incandescent bulb
illuminating it. So it's a wee, teeny, tiny tank.
With a wee, teeny, tiny bulb. And I had just purchased a few feeder guppies from the pet store and quarantined them in this little tank and moved them into another tank. I think that's too small for a quarantine tank, but give me a break. This was over 20 years ago, about 25, I think.
So you were about 10.
Yeah, maybe a little older than that.
But so he was wee and tiny, too.
Anyway, I noticed sometime after that, maybe a week or so after that, at the bottom of the tank, a little sprig, a little frond of greenery. And I looked at that, fascinated by it, not having seen anything of the kind in my aquariums before. I just looked at it for a while, realized it was some kind of moss. And I determined to watch it, so I did. I watched that little sprig of moss grow, and after a little while, it had set out a few more fronds. It was a little bit bigger, and you know, at the beginning, it was probably only about a centimeter long, one single frond. And after a while, it was, you know, maybe a dozen fronds, and the tallest one was maybe 2 inches long. And I said, "Well, this is great." So I moved it into another tank, and I started spreading it out. And pretty soon, I had a whole bunch of this growing in my tanks, and I thought it was great. My fish spawned in it. My fish hid in it. Some of my fish ate it. Some of my fish didn't. But it was great stuff, and I had it for years and years and years and years. It was lovely stuff. And then later, I had some problems with a tank and had to take it down and didn't preserve it correctly. And so I lost that moss. But I think I've determined subsequently that that was not Java moss. It was something else. But it was some sort of aquatic moss, and that was my introduction to the moss. And wow, that was kind of a rambling story. I hope everybody's still with us. But it was great because, like I said, fish would spawn in it, and it was kind of attractive, and it was good at reducing nutrients in the water, and it didn't really take much to grow. If it could grow in that little teeny aqua tank with hardly any light, you know, the right wrong type of light, I mean, it was incandescent light things, then it must be pretty cool stuff. So that's why we're going to talk about mosses today.
What kind of mosses are we going to talk about?
Probably, in general, sort of all aquatic mosses that you can keep in aquariums are semi-aquatic, as I said before. But, various types. One of the most popular and common is the Java moss. It's probably the easiest to get a hold of. The scientific name is often misquoted as Vesicularia dubiana, but it's actually been determined to be Taxophyllum barbieri. I do kind of the Italian accent on these, and that's okay, because I defy you to find anybody who actually speaks Latin natively these days. So, I'm good. Okay, nobody ridicule me. And, there's that one, and there are other species such as Vesicularia montagnae, which is Christmas moss, and there's Singapore moss, which I believe is another Vesicularia species. There are many other types that you can find. There's Physidens and so on, and we might even talk a little bit about liverworts, which are related plants as well.
Okay, now what is moss for? Why do we want to keep it in our tank?
Well, if you want a really easy plant that will help reduce nitrates and other wastes in your water, that will provide a good hiding place for a lot of fish, a good spawning site for a lot of fish, a good hiding place for young fish, fry specifically, a source of food for fry, and a source of food for some of your fish, then you should try it. And it's practically indestructible and practically grows by itself. So there you go. There are some good reasons to keep it.
Okay, what kind of a setup do you need?
Java moss, specifically, we'll talk about that specifically and then later move on to some others and how they're different, will grow in almost anything. It will grow in a jar with ambient room light. So if you have, you know, you're raising bettas and you want to keep them in individual jars, you can do that with a sprig of Java moss in each that will help reduce nitrates and stuff like that. You can keep it in a high light aquarium, you can keep it in a low light aquarium. It really is amazing how little light it requires, but in the same way, it can also grow in a high light aquarium and grow fairly quickly. The main thing to remember is that it doesn't really like high temperatures all that much. Not that it will die, it just won't grow very quickly in higher temperatures. So
higher temperatures being defined as what?
Well, I still have it grow for me in an aquarium that are even 80 degrees or 82, 84, but a lot more slowly than it would at, you know, 74. If you have it below 74, anything that's considered, you know, human habitability from, you know, maybe like 65 up to 74, something like that, it'll grow like a weed in general very quickly. And it just slows down the warmer you get. So it can still survive in, you know, 86 degrees, but it's not going to grow very fast.
Why is that? Where is it from originally? Java, I guess. Oh, sorry, dumb question.
Actually, it may not be. Who knows? My suspicion is that there are several species of moss in the hobby that circulate as Java moss, and some of them grow in warmer temperatures and some of them don't. And nobody really knows because people buy it from someone else who calls it Java moss, you know, and it the last time it was actually seen by a scientist may be never, and it may have been, you know, several times ago, so who knows what you've got is really called, but most people tend to say that Java moss does well at cooler temperatures. I've noticed the same thing with Java moss. I've noticed with other species of moss, some of them are much more tolerant of warmer temperatures, and some are less so than Java moss, so it just depends on what you've got. For example, Singapore moss seems to do fine in warmer temperatures. Christmas moss, not so much. Christmas moss will survive at 80 degrees, but it doesn't grow the Christmas tree-shaped fronds that it's famous for. But if you take it down to 74, wow, and it really will.
Yes, in fact, when we lived in Hawaii, you tried to have Christmas moss in the tanks in our apartment, which was not air-conditioned, and they didn't do that great.
Mm-hmm.
But your tank in your office at work, which was air-conditioned, did great.
Yeah, I had a big moss wall all along the back of it with Christmas moss coming off of it in Christmas tree-shaped fronds. So there you go. So temperature is important.
It was very festive.
Yeah. And in fact, Christmas moss, or not Christmas moss, Java moss, any moss, I guess, in right conditions can be aggressive to the extent that it can overcrowd other plants and grow over them, cover them up.
Like ivy?
Yeah, and other decorations and all kinds of things. So it's strange to think of a plant displaying aggression, but in a way you can say that they do because they can actually overtake a tank and in fact should be pruned regularly when they're growing fast. They look better. Whatever structure you have them attached to or so on, they look better if they're trimmed regularly. They tend to be more compact in their growth, just like just about any plant. So think of that. It's good to prune them regularly.
Okay, so what would be good sources for getting various types of mosses?
A lot of aquarists will give it to you if you know another aquarist who has some. They'll give you some because they are pruning it regularly. Some stores will carry it, especially stores that breed some of their own fish. The internet is once again a good resource. Aquabid, places like that. Or just stores that sell aquarium plants. You can usually get mosses of various kinds from those sources. Not just Java moss, but Christmas moss, Physidens, willow moss, and, you know, different types. Taiwan moss.
And what should you look for when you're choosing a cutting?
Well, if it looks nice and green and healthy, it should be. Try not to get one that has algae growing on it, or that has been chewed up by something, you know, a fish or something. There are some fish that will chew it up. But if it looks nice and green and healthy and there isn't algae growing on it, you're probably good. It doesn't take much. It also ships very well. It shipped just damp, barely damp, in plastic bags usually, and can survive months, actually, in a bag like that, even in the dark. So.
Now, when you get a new cutting of a moss, should you mm-hmm. quarantine it like you would a new fish?
Wouldn't be a bad idea, just to see if there are any snail eggs or amphipod eggs or anything like that on there. It wouldn't hurt. It's maybe not as vital as it is with fish, but it's always a good idea. Once you get it home, the best thing to do is attach it to something, because most mosses grow with a more interesting, more attractive habit if you attach them to something, and they tend to be healthier, although you can have perfectly healthy Java moss that'll just float around in the water in a big wad.
So attach to like a piece of driftwood or a rock or
driftwood, a lava rock, a decoration, something like that. Rubber bands work okay because the moss will attach itself eventually, and then you can take the rubber band off, just clip it off or something. You can use black cotton thread and just wrap it, not firmly but not too hard, to whatever it is. And then the black cotton thread will eventually deteriorate, something like that. Once it attaches, like I said, it'll grow in a more interesting, attractive way, and it will tend to do better. Grow a little faster.
I guess you could say it wants to put down some roots.
Exactly. Although, technically, they're not roots, they're rhizoids. But that's okay. They're sort of like roots. Since moss is not a vascular plant with a complex system for moving water from one part of the plant to the other. It just basically does that by diffusion from cells to cells. It can't grow very large and very tall. It doesn't have true roots or true leaves. It is a little bit more simple. And that's part of why mosses stay low to the ground, because they don't have a way to get water from, you know, the low roots down to a high trunk like a tree, something like that.
Okay, so what kind of, are there limitations on size of a container you can keep it in? I mean, it seems like just would depend on how big you want it to grow.
Right, right. You really don't have to worry about that.
You can keep it in anything, really, right?
Yeah, and water parameters are not really, they're not particular. You can keep it in soft water, you can keep it in hard water, you can keep it in alkaline water and acid water. And like I said, the main thing to worry about is temperature. As long as you keep a fairly on temperature on the low side, it'll do great. Fertilizer is not a big issue. You can keep Java moss for years and it will thrive without any fertilizer being added to the water. It just needs a little bit of fish waste or similar in the water. Propagates like anything, and since it doesn't have true roots or structures of that nature, it's really easy to propagate. You just rip off a frond or a clump or whatever you want and put it somewhere else. And it's that simple. Now you have two Java moss plants.
Like a hydra.
And that goes the same for the other mosses. They all work that way.
Okay, any troubleshooting bits we should hear?
Well, some fish will eat it, so do be careful about that. Goldfish, for example, gulp it down like candy. It's still possible to grow it in their tank, but I would say that the best way to do that would be to add an established piece of driftwood or something like that has some of it already growing on it, that has its rhizoids really sunk into it, and then they will nibble off a lot of the surplus, but it'll eventually grow back out of the driftwood or whatever from the bits that are attached, and they'll tend to hug the driftwood, and probably some of them will survive. That's a good way to do it. And different mosses are not necessarily as tough as Java moss. Like I said, Christmas moss is less resistant to warmer temperatures and doesn't grow as prettily if it's not at lower temperatures. It might need a little more fertilizer. I did notice that it is a little bit more resistant to a Siamese algae eater nibbling on it than Java moss. Siamese algae eaters will totally rip Java moss to shreds, and they will chew on Christmas moss, but they tend to go for the older growth rather than the newer growth, which I think is because it's a little bit rougher. If you pick up a piece of Java moss, it's soft like a feather, and if you pick up Christmas moss, it's a little rough. Each of the little leaflets on the fronds are a little bit more rigid.
So they like the more rough.
No.
That's why they go for the older leaves?
They go for the older leaves because I think the older leaves are not quite as rough.
Oh, okay.
I think they've softened up a bit. So they don't go for the newer leaves as much, in my experience. Let's see. You do have to clip it, like I said, if you want to keep it healthy, because it'll grow thickly and then the bottom fronds will die off if the top fronds on top shield them from all light. So rather than letting that happen, just trim it regularly and then the bottom fronds will be replaced by new green fronds and you'll have a thick, healthy, luxuriant layer that is thinner rather than a really thick layer in which the bottom layer is dead or dying and the top layer is healthy. Looks better.
Anything else?
Not that I can think of at the moment. Let's see.
Mosses are beautiful.
Yeah, I do have some right now that recently attached to a half of a coconut that I have in our African clawed frogs tank. Hiro's tank. They have been growing on this coconut for some time, and it looks like they're going to spread over and make a nice little green hill out of it. So they're one of the plants that can grow successfully in an African clawed frog tank, along with Java fern and Anubias, which are what I have in there. I don't think anything else would do really well in there. Well, there's probably something, but those are the common plants that are doing well in there, and it's really kind of neat to see them spread, doing it quite quickly. His tank is not heated, so they're growing very quickly, and when it fills out completely, I'll put a photo up maybe on the site, and you can check it out, see what it looks like.
It'll be pretty. Enjoy your moss.
Oh, one other thing!
Oh, what?
Amphipods eat it. So if you have a tank where you've got a lot of amphipods, then you need to put in something that eats amphipods if you really want your moss to do well, because darn, they really eat it fast. I had a tank that lost all of its moss because I only had red cherry shrimp in there, And they don't really eat the moss. They nibble on it, but I don't think they actually eat it. I think they're eating things that grow on it. And then the amphipods just kind of went nuts and ate it. See, the thing about amphipods, you can control them by the amount of food they get. But if you have a tank full of thriving, healthy moss, that's the food. So you're kind of in trouble. So put a beta in or something. Have it eat
and
the
then
amphipods.
Get some moss.
And then you'll be okay. Well, maybe a beta's not such a good idea. Because then you'll have to keep it at a warmer temperature. But put something in there that eats amphipods. And sorry this episode was a bit bizarre. Well, maybe I'm not sorry. But
maybe
at any rate,
like it.
I am remarking in a neutral fashion on the bizarreness of this episode. And thus, we will leave you until next time. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.